Welcome to Soccer Portal X Daily. I'm Alex, joining you from a very grey but football-filled Tuesday.
And I'm Sam. Super pumped to be here as always. We've got a packed show today, Alex, World Cup talk, medieval football, and honestly one of the wildest crime stories I've heard in a long time.
Indeed. Let's kick things off with the big one, the 2026 World Cup. The New York Times has a fascinating piece out about whether this summer's tournament can actually live up to the enormous expectations being placed on it.
Yeah, and the key word there is fans. Like, the whole thing could hinge on whether the fans show up, engage, and make the atmosphere what it needs to be across all these North American venues.
It's a genuinely interesting question. The infrastructure is there, the stadiums are world-class, but the culture of soccer in the United States, and to some extent Canada and Mexico, is still developing compared to traditional World Cup host nations.
I mean, I'd push back on that a little. MLS attendance is up, the USMNT has a real fan base now, and honestly people go crazy for big events in this country. The Super Bowl, March Madness, Americans love a spectacle.
That's fair, but a spectacle and a deep football culture are two different things. What FIFA and the organizers want is sustained passion across 48 teams and dozens of venues over a month, not just a few marquee matches.
Okay, that's a fair distinction. But I'm still optimistic. I think this could be a real turning point for soccer in the States.
I hope you're right. The stakes are enormous, for the sport's growth in North America and for FIFA's commercial ambitions. A lot is riding on this.
Absolutely. And speaking of building toward the World Cup, we've got some news out of San Diego that ties in perfectly.
Yes, Snapdragon Stadium has been announced as a host venue for international friendly soccer matches in the lead-up to the tournament. This is exactly the kind of warm-up activity that helps build local excitement.
Snapdragon is such a cool stadium too. It's relatively new, it's got a great atmosphere, and San Diego is a city that's been hungry for top-level soccer for a while now.
It makes a lot of sense geographically as well. You've got a huge soccer-loving population in Southern California, proximity to the Mexican border, and a fanbase that will turn out for quality international football.
And these friendlies serve a dual purpose, right? They get fans excited, but they also let teams use American venues to prepare tactically before the real thing kicks off.
Precisely. You want players and coaching staffs familiar with the pitches, the travel logistics, the climate. These matches are far more than just exhibition games.
I'd love to see a big matchup there. Like, give me Brazil versus Argentina at Snapdragon and I will personally drive to San Diego.
I wouldn't say no to that either. Right, let's shift gears now because this next story is genuinely one of the more extraordinary things I've read this week.
Oh, you're talking about the wig guy. The wig guy. I cannot believe this is a real story.
So for listeners who haven't seen this, NBC News is reporting that a former Alabama football player has been accused of wearing wigs to impersonate NFL players as part of a loan fraud scheme.
He allegedly put on wigs and disguises to pretend to be actual NFL players and secure fraudulent loans. I have so many questions. Like, did it work? How many times did it work?
According to the reports, it did work on multiple occasions, which is perhaps the most alarming part of the story. It speaks to some serious gaps in verification processes at financial institutions.
I mean, on one hand, yes, that's a systemic problem. On the other hand, wigs, Alex. Wigs.
I won't pretend it isn't absurd. But the legal consequences here are very serious. Loan fraud at this scale carries significant federal penalties, and this young man's future is now deeply uncertain.
Yeah, you're right to bring it back to that. It's easy to laugh at the method, but this is a person whose life could be derailed completely. It's a sad story underneath the bizarre headlines.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that the transition out of elite college or professional sport can be incredibly difficult for some athletes, financially and psychologically.
Well said. Okay, let's lighten the mood a bit because our next story is genuinely delightful. Alex, tell the people about uppies and downies.
Right, so the New York Times has a wonderful feature on a medieval football game called Uppies and Downies. No rules, no time limit, no referee, just chaos, essentially.
I love this so much. This is football in its purest, most unhinged form. How long has this been going on?
It dates back centuries. The game is played in certain parts of the British Isles and involves two sides, the Uppies and the Downies, typically divided by geography or birth, trying to get a ball to their respective goal.
And the goals are like, miles apart, right? It's not a pitch. It's an entire town.
Essentially, yes. The playing area can span streets, fields, rivers, whatever is in between. It's more of a communal ritual than a sport in the modern sense.
I genuinely think this is the most fun thing in football. Like, forget VAR, forget offside lines, just give me a ball and tell me to get it to the other end of the village.
There is something wonderfully pure about it. Though I suspect after about 40 minutes you'd be reconsidering your enthusiasm.
Huh. Fair point. But it's a great reminder that football, at its core, is just people wanting to compete and have fun together. That's been true for hundreds of years.
Beautifully put, Sam. And it connects back to our World Cup conversation in a way. The game belongs to everyone, from medieval villages to billion-dollar stadiums.
Okay, I did not expect this episode to get philosophical, but here we are and I'm into it.
Let's also quickly touch on the NCAA news, because there are a couple of items worth flagging for our listeners who follow the college football landscape.
Yeah, the NCAA is recommending an earlier start to the football season in 2027. This has been debated for a while. What's your read on it?
From a pure scheduling standpoint, it creates more flexibility and potentially reduces fixture congestion later in the season. But it also raises questions about player welfare and academic calendars.
The player welfare angle is huge right now given everything happening with NIL and athlete rights. You can't just keep adding to the calendar without addressing those concerns.
Agreed. And separately, there's a legal development. Owen Hynek has been granted a preliminary injunction in his NCAA eligibility case at Oklahoma. A court has temporarily allowed him to participate while the case proceeds.
These eligibility battles are becoming more and more common. Athletes are increasingly willing to fight the NCAA in court, and they're winning more often than they used to.
The legal landscape around college athletics is shifting dramatically. The NCAA's traditional authority is being challenged on multiple fronts simultaneously.
It's a fascinating time to be watching college sports. Anyway, we should probably wrap up. We've covered a lot of ground today.
We have indeed. World Cup expectations, Snapdragon Stadium's friendly fixtures, a truly bizarre fraud case, and the timeless chaos of Uppies and Downies.
Honestly, one of my favorite episodes we've done. Something for everyone today: history, crime, World Cup hype, and medieval mayhem.
That's Soccer Portal X Daily for you. Thank you so much for listening, wherever you're tuning in from.
If you enjoyed the show, leave us a review, share it with a friend, and we'll be back tomorrow with more. Until then, keep the ball rolling.
Take care, everyone.